grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Disaster of biblical proportion.
Biblical. What he means is Old Testament, Mr. Yes. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff. Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness. Earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave. Human sacrifice. God began living together.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 293 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. Chris Jordan, your host here, coming at you from Austin, Texas. That amazing music in your earlobes, folks, is Depeche Mode off the album Playing the Angel. The song is John the Revelator. One of my favorite Depeche Mode songs, one of my favorite songs, period. Tonight is one of my favorite topics. Period. End Time Prophecy. We will be joined by the amazing Bishop James Cloud, author of Walking with Ghosts, an Exorcist Memoir of the Paranormal, as well as host of the Exorcist Journey podcast. So we will be talking about all things End Time Prophecy, biblical everything. Just to get us in the mood here, let's start off with a quick reading. Let's see if I still got these chops, folks. Revelation chapter 8. When he opened the seventh seal, there was a silence in heaven for about half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. Another angel, who had a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all God's people on the golden altar in front of the throne. The smoke of the incense, together with the prayers of God's people, went up before God from the angel's hand. The angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and hurled it on the earth. And there came peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and earthquake. Then the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to sound them. The first angel sounded his trumpet, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and it was hurled down on the earth. A third of the earth was burned up, a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. The second angel sounded his trumpet, and something like a huge mountain, all ablaze, was thrown into the sea. A third of the sea turned into blood, a third of the living creatures in the sea died, a third of the ships were destroyed. The third angel sounded his trumpet, and a great star, blazing like a torch, fell from the sky on a third of the rivers and the springs of the water, and the name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters turned bitter, and many people died from the waters that became bitter. The fourth angel sounded his trumpet, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them turned dark. A third of the day was without light, and also a third of the night. As I watched, I heard an eagle that was flying in midair call out in a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the trumpet blasts, to be sounded by the other three angels." Those are the words of John the Revelator. From chapter 8 of the book of Revelations, I always use the New American Standard Version, typically either that or the New Jerusalem Version. Welcome to the show, Archbishop James Cloud. How are you today?
I am well. How are you doing?
Doing great. I hope I did not just utterly butcher that reading. I mean, I stumbled on the first few lines there, but it's been a hot minute since I just cold read some scripture. It doesn't always, you know, like flow like honey from the vine, so to speak, the way the words go. And Revelation is especially one of those that is not just trippy in its wording. And I mean that in the most punny of senses, folks, not just trippy in its wording as to what it means, but trippy in its wording in the way it's written. It is written like a large expositional poem. And it's very interesting if you stop and read the book of Revelations, especially if you start reading into chapter 8 there, some of the things that are currently happening in the world around us in 2020 right now. So to have you on the show tonight, Father, to talk about these things, to go into this, I think is probably one of the best things that could ever happen for my audience. I mean, we've talked about these things cursorily on our show in the past, but we've never really sat down with a person of the cloth who teaches these things regularly. So to have you unabridged for this time to really pick your brain about end time revelations, end time prophecies, things of that nature in the Bible throughout history, that kind of stuff, I think is really incredible. So thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm happy to share, and hopefully I'll do a decent job of it.
Well, you always do. You always do. And for a little background for everybody, just so you know, Archbishop is an exorcist in the Order of St. Michael, the Archangel. Actually just got done with the deliverance not too long ago, just a week or so ago, right?
Yeah, it was about, oh goodness, maybe 2-3 weeks ago now. And, you know, from the gate, out the gate, it looked like it was going to be something really dangerous, perhaps, or things unexpected might happen. And it turned out that when I went through the process, sat and counseled the person and just prayed with them, that everything pretty much just tucked its tail and left without much of a fight at all, actually.
Wow. Wow. Fantastic. That's always good to hear whenever you hear of the deliverance of a soul without the hard-fought battle. Because that is often not necessarily even for the people around, but for the possessed, it is so entirely draining, straining physically, spiritually, and can often leave a person very broken. So
it can. And you know, a lot of folks are real nervous when I'm called to the house. And, you know, because all they have in their mind is the scenes from the Exorcist movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And they think, you know, I'm going to strap them down and, yep, you know, dunk them in holy water kind of thing.
Yeah, great. We're gonna have an Emily Rose situation on our hands here, you know. Like, you know, and seriously, though, but and that's something that I've been trying to point out on this show for so long, Father, is that just because something is paranormal doesn't mean it's a ghost. Just because something is a UFO doesn't mean it's extraterrestrial life. You know, like these words are used like Kleenex, you know, like, no, man, Kleenex is a brand. It's a tissue. It's a facial tissue is what it is, you know. And unfortunately, possession is thrown around in that way. And like you said, people think you're coming down the road with a bunch of candles, and like a cassock surplus, everything ready to go. And it's go time, you know, like, hey, I've got my copy right here, the Roman Ritual. It is next to me every single time you're on the air. and it's got the Latin on one side. That's how hardcore I am. You want to hear me really butcher something? but it really is a misnomer, you know, a lot of the time, because it's more the fact that the spirit of the person is being oppressed by evil. Yeah. They are obsessed with something. that they need deliverance from. And before we get into the end time revelation, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that really comes to bear on the concept of end time revelation, on some of the things that most biblical scholars who are looking at it in this way are interpreting this as. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because there's a reason why over the last decade, even the Catholic Church has rebooted its school of exorcism in Rome and said that we went horribly awry. We are so sorry, everybody. We should have been telling you there is a presence of true evil in the world. Yes, God loves all of us, but that doesn't mean that there isn't evil there. That doesn't mean that there isn't the literal beast stalking in the night. And for them to say that, like, unabridgedly to say that.
Yeah.
It's a big thing. And like right now in the news, it's all over the place, you know, that the Pope said that, yeah, you know, we should have union. We should recognize civil union of same sex couples. And fantastic, you know. But why did we not hear a bigger resounding bell in the news about, hey, yeah, don't forget, evil exists.
Yeah.
We hear it. Not that the other one isn't a big bell to ring. It's a beautiful bell to ring. It's an amazing, loving bell to ring, and it needs to be rung, most definitely. But it's also one of those that a lot of people, especially on some hardcore sides, might think that is one of many signs.
Sure, sure.
So,
you know, there's been a lot of things that have come down the pipe. So if you look at the so one thing that folks can look up is the prophecies of Saint Malachi, or I call it Malachi.
Malachi. But, absolutely.
It's the prophecy of the Pope. And the prophecy of the Popes actually ends with Francis. And this Francis is that there'll be basically a defection from the faith, and a great trial will hit the Roman Church.
Yep, causing a schism. It's the final schism.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this Pope has created quite the schism within the Roman Church with a lot of his teachings and thought, personal thoughts, that go against the teaching of the Catholic Church and the Catechism itself. And so,
sure.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of priests and bishops that are very concerned about what's going on.
Absolutely. And I mean, I had to hop on somebody's timeline today, and I'll shout him out. Jared, how you doing? I'm not putting any last names out there, folks. That's not how we roll here. He knows who he is. He posted the article, and then somebody responded and went the way the modern world goes. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And of course, started going through all the horrible litany of things from the church and stuff like that, and started talking about how this was hypocritical, all kinds of things. And there was some retort, and other people commented, and then more people commented. And I was like, as a former seminarian and teacher of religion, this just makes me laugh. Like, I would love to start correcting, but I don't know if anybody's got the time to read it. Like, and then somebody was like, no, like, if you don't mind, like, we'd love to hear what you have to say. And I was like, okay, here we go. Short version. You know, since Vatican II, there has been the doctrine of all are loved, all are children of God. And there has been a huge call for bringing the homosexual community back into the church as a whole. And, you know, when you're granted, much like most people do, whenever they see this headline of the Pope says this, they assume that, I mean, much like whenever, like, the president says something, hey, guess what? Just because a presidential candidate promises you something doesn't mean a lick that he can do that.
Exactly.
There's still, like, a room of other people whose job it literally is to decide whether or not that happens. And when the Pope becomes Pope, he gives up his red hat of cardinal, and he actually becomes a subservient bishop.
Yeah.
The Bishop of Rome. And at that point, he cannot sit in conclave and make a decision that becomes doctrine.
Yeah, like, and the only exception to that is that he chose to spoke ex cathedra.
Exactly, an ex cathedra statement. Like, there have been two in the history of the church, folks. The last one was 1950 when they said that the Assumption of Mary, body and soul happened. That was the last ex cathedra statement. Aside from that, it was like 1854. And it was the Immaculate Conception. You know? So it's one of those, what it does set up for, which is fantastic, is that if you recognize the civil union, the same way that we recognize the civil union and the religious union of any Episcopal priest who converts to Catholicism and remains married, we cannot invalidate that union. That union is sacred and above sacred than the priestly duties.
Yeah.
Because most priests do not take vows, folks. They make solemn promises to their bishop. Like, ordered priests take vows. Cistercians take vows. Monks take vows. Priests of the collar in your average parish church do not. They make solemn promises to their bishop to fulfill their promise. And their call of vocation. My call of vocation, I made actual vows. I am a married man. So those vows were between me, God, and my wife. And those are sacred above all else. So they can't invalidate that. And that's kind of the point that the Pope is making. And what that sets forth is kind of the backdoor legal precedent to say, now these people may be allowed back into the world of sacrament. These people who were once shunned can now be brought back in and made whole as part of the community of Christ. They can now come in. They can now accept Eucharist because their marriage can now be blessed the same way if I went out and married a Jewish girl, had a Jewish wedding, and had my marriage blessed by the church, you know? So it's interesting to see these kind of things going about, and yet still there is, like you're saying, the argument from so many bishops and so many other people about that prophecy of Saint Malachi.
Yeah.
And about definitely. And about how this final bishop, this final pope leads to the coming of the Antichrist, leads to all this stuff. So let's kind of really start, I guess, at the beginning of these things. And let's start going a little bit through Revelation and how it relates to today, because that, I think, is really the crux of so many. And I don't mean like argument, capital A arguments, you know, where people like, well, I guess, yeah, people do get vehemently angry. People do get, you know, to the point of fisticuffs over it. Sadly. So
I mean, never underestimate stupidity.
Well, also, it's just the fact of, you know, I've made the point numerous times on this show. Tell me a time when a war wasn't fought over money, God, or women. One of the three. That's why every war in the world was started. At some point, it was either money, God, or women. There was more than one war fought because of the honor of a woman. So, yeah. Let's start getting in a little bit to the actual text of Revelation and how it relates somewhat to what is going on in modern society and how people interpret that as such.
Well, so when you look at the book of Revelation, the people have to understand that Revelation isn't necessarily written in chronological order. So you have, because there is a lot of metaphor, and Revelation came out of the Isle of Patmos prison where John was imprisoned. It came out in chunks. And so yeah. they did their best to put it all together. And so, like your trumpet and bowl judgments, they actually happen concurrently together. And you see the effect of both of those things happening together, and the after effects being also part of the judgment sequence. So, first and foremost, where we're at today, we're sitting, not only sitting, but have one foot over the precipice of the rise of Antichrist. Because you see, as I believe it was St. Paul said, a great falling away would occur.
Yes.
Right before the man of sin, or Antichrist, rises on the scene. You're seeing a very large defection away from orthodox truth, from the scriptures as well as tradition, and it's truly going toward a more worldly, secular slant. And, you know, the Bible tells us clearly that if you're a friend of the world, you make yourself an enemy of God. And so God has certain requirements, shall we say. Even though he's love, he's also just and holy.
Absolutely. And so, he is a rough master.
He can be. Yep. And that's why, you know, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom.
That's right.
The scripture.
It is one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit originally. The fear of God. Mm-hmm. It is now known as wonder and awe.
Yeah.
Gives it a nice really warm, fuzzy twist. But if you consider fear of your Lord, it's a little bit more impactful.
Absolutely.
Got a little more zazz, you know, to it.
Well, you know, if you understand that when you look out on all of creation, this black hole, the universe, then bringing it down to a flower, a bee, a human. And he spoke all of it into existence with mere word or thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get a sense of the immensity, inexpressible immensity of God's power and intelligence, wisdom, etc. And to know that, well, just as the scriptures say, it says, you know, don't fear the ones that can destroy your body. Fear the one that can destroy both body and soul in hell.
Yeah. And I think one of the passages you're referring to is actually 2 Thessalonians 2,
mm-hmm.
where it says, don't let anyone deceive you in any way, for that day will not come until the rebellion occurs and the man of the lawlessness is revealed. The man doomed to destruction, he will oppose and will exalt himself over everything that is called God or is worshipped, so that he sets himself up in God's temple, proclaiming himself to be God.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think is the crux of a lot of our issue, just in a broader sense, sociologically, Father. And we talked about this with the head of the Joseph Campbell Society, is that concept of hero worship.
Sure.
And whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, hey, whether it's even a priest, no offense, folks, these are fallible human beings.
Absolutely.
They are fallible human beings. I remember at one point a talk that was given that I heard talking about the horrible realities of Jerry Maguire and the concept of "You Complete Me." And it's like, mm-hmm. what a horrible burden to place upon somebody.
Sure.
To say that without you, I'm not whole. I'm not a happy person. I'm not complete. And it was like, wow. And so often, yeah, we get caught up in this concept. We get caught up in that worldly concept of love. We lose the concept of agape, that concept of Christly, open-hearted love of everybody as a brother.
Yeah.
And we get caught up in this romantic sense of love, which really does kind of start exalting one thing over the other, whereas the other one is focused much more on you making sure that everybody is loved the same and given the same amount of love as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that our world has gotten to the point of hero worship, that we have gotten to the point of literally looking for that political savior, air quotes, full on there, to pull us out of something, like, that's our job.
Yeah.
You know, like that, no offense, folks, but like, that wasn't even technically Jesus's job. We're still supposed to pull our weight, you know, like even despite that,
you know, there's a reason he said, take up your cross and follow me.
That's right. That's right. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fun. Once you know the truth, like, you can't walk away from knowing it. And I'm not trying to get religious here, people. This is just where a lot of the end time prophecy starts. Whether you're talking about your Nostradamus, whether you're talking about American end time prophecy, whether you're talking about end time prophecy cults like Jonestown, things like that.
Yep.
They all start here. They all trace themselves right back to the Bible. Every one of them. I would challenge you to find one that doesn't at least pull from what we're either talking about right now, that verse from 2 Thessalonians, or whether they're talking about the New Jerusalem from Revelation 21 that I just put up on screen, you know, the golden shining city that is the replacement of the old corrupt Jerusalem. And it doesn't really matter. It all matriculates back and roots right here. So that's why I think this conversation is an important one to have as a preface to what we're talking about this evening.
Well, and every dictator that's ever lived on the earth in political things, every dictator that's ever lived were looked to by the masses to be the answer to all the problems that's going on.
That's right.
And as the old saying goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yep.
And, you know, they don't have checks and balances or anything like that going on. And it can corrupt the most well-intentioned person. But the truth about power is you never gain power in order to give it away. In political terms.
Yeah.
And so you just keep amassing more power until, well, you got your Mao Zedongs, your Pol Pots, Hitler.
Even into your Duertes and everything else today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can't tell you how many.
I mean, Marcos, good God, how many people did he put down, you know?
Well, yeah.
So,
but his wife had an M2 collection.
Oh, incredible. But, you know, the thing is, as all of these things go, they all tend to crumble, especially the ones that tend to put a date on things. Now, I'm not saying that there is not something to this, folks. All right. Because here's the thing, the trick of the prophet, the crux of the issue with the prophet is that the prophet is often not listened to the prophet is often thrown out with the bathwater and the baby, and often very, very misinterpreted, you know? Just recently I was watching a show with my wife. Oh, it was Outlander. And my wife loves that show. We were watching it and some of the people on a ship referred to the Jonah on the ship. Like, we need to get rid of the Jonah. And my wife was like, who the hell's Jonah? Nobody. I was like, baby, they're referring to the biblical Jonah. And she was like, well, why would they refer to that? I'm like, there's a person on the ship who is skipping out on their duties and is running from their God and has cursed the voyage. So they're getting ready to throw them over. but that's the thing, you know, and something that I try to warn people about whenever they start talking about Nostradamus, whenever they start talking about things, calling Nostradamus a prophet.
Sure.
I have issue with that, and I take issue with that because of all things, the prophets give a way out. There is always a if this, then that. So if you stop the this, that won't happen. Get it? So there's always a clear choice with an actual prophecy. There's always that granted choice from the divine that if you do this, there will be reprieve.
Yeah.
And I think that that is something that people have lost sight of, Father. I think that's something that we've gotten caught up once again in using the word prophet interchangeably, like Kleenex, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Is it a facial tissue? Is it for blowing your nose? You know, and well, it is
most of your modern prophets, they're treated more like fortune tellers rather than a prophet.
Yeah. And I think that, like I said, the issue is that people like Nostradamus, that kind of stuff, there was no out in a quatrain.
No,
there was no, like, if you stop doing this, like, he won't get the shard of wood in his eye, you know? And there are a lot of things that can winky dink match up if you're able to go through and interpret things like that. And hey, you know, anybody that's good with reading some words can interpret some things like that, right?
Definitely. And the problem is, even when people look at the basics of the Bible, they look at it through a modern lens.
Exactly.
And they try to use a modern interpretation for a different time period altogether. You know, 2,000 years separated from that time. And you have to use the lens of the prophets themselves. Mm-hmm. What were they seeing? You know, in some of the prophecies, they don't know what they're seeing, so they use animal characteristics to describe what could very well be machines that they're seeing in the future.
Sure. Ezekiel's wheels, absolutely.
Sure. And, you know, without the rule of tradition, one can't properly interpret the scriptures, because the tradition is kind of the ruler by which you measure what's being said.
Well, and let's get into that for just a second, because I think that's very important and something that a lot of people, once again, really fail to understand about history. And that is the tradition, capital T tradition, and a reason why a lot of books are in what is called the Apocrypha. I remember jokingly at my uncle's Christmas party one year after I came back from the seminary, I gave him a copy of the New Jerusalem Bible for Christmas. Because he's a big King James fan. And I was like, here you go, here's one from the actual Greek. And he had a good laugh about it. You know, he's like, I'll add it to my collection. I'm like, great. But it's one of those, like, it does come down to those things. When you're talking about things like the Book of Revelation, it's so important to understand, like you said, the time period in which they lived. You cannot look at it myopically and try to interpret through a modern filter. You really do have to understand the world of the persecuted Christian, historically, at least as much as we know from historians at the time, things like that. So it is very important to A, read the footnotes, people, B, get yourself a really good Bible that gives you those things in the preface of the chapter, where whenever you start to go into Thessalonians, it's going to give you what was happening during the time period that Second Thessalonians was written.
Yeah, those are great.
Because it's very crucial. It's very, very crucial to the understanding of what was written, why it was written, even the words that were written. Because a lot of these languages, once you start getting into Greek, Coptic, ancient Hebrew, things like that, dialects change in different places. Words change in different places. The words' meanings change depending on what's around it. So there does come a lot to interpretation in that realm.
And the English language is terrible as a interpretive language.
Horrid.
It's horrible.
And that's just it. You know, like, hey, go tell somebody a Spanish joke in French and then tell it to me in English. And that's kind of the equivalent of most Bibles that are out there.
Yeah.
Is a secondary translation done from a tertiary translation of something else, which is why, like I said, trying to find a good version where you're looking at original Coptic texts, you're looking at original Hebrew texts, that kind of stuff, translated directly from the source material, not from a Latin. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Latin. It's a beautiful language. But if you're translating any of the Bible from Latin, you're doing it wrong. None of it was written in Latin. Not a stitch of it. So, yeah. And to get back to the point of the Apocrypha, and why these things were taken out, why some of them were removed, why some of them are in versions of the Bible, like the New American Standard, the New Jerusalem Bible, that kind of stuff, as opposed to the King James, when that was compiled and put together. And all of this comes into the understanding of history. And like you said, the tradition with a capital T, if it was taught in a community or two, they weren't discounting the book. It was just that it was only taught in a community or two, and there were 85 groups of Christianity out there. So is that part of the greater narrative and story of Christ? Was their great philosophic quandary. So they left it up to the fact of what was understood and read by most communities. Not that they're written truth to be gained with a capital T from the Gospel of Thomas, from the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, Gospel of Mary, and the lot, you know. There's some really good truth in there, and yes, some very esoteric truth, absolutely. It goes down some very Kabbalistic teaching, which, if you really start breaking things down, there's really only one reason why a 12-year-old would be listened to by the Sanhedrin and the high priest, and it's probably because he was a Kabbalistic student. So, like, yeah. There's just this whole world that, if you understand the history of what was going on at the time, really opens up new understandings. And to start talking about the books that were removed, to start talking about the books, like you were saying, like the prophecies of St. Malachi, those teachings, those readings, they really do come into play in a totally different world and a totally different right.
Yeah.
And let's get into a little bit of prophecy of St. Malachi and the popes real quick, because I think that one is another that, much like the Book of Revelation, is what a lot of modern end time prophecy is tied to, with New World Order, things like that. Because, like, even the topic of end time prophecy goes across so many topics on this show. Like, people are even relating UFOs into the world of end time prophecy. Like we said, even the world of exorcisms being on the rise. Like Dr. Venkman said earlier, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. These are the things that come to mind when people think end time prophecy, you know. Are you seeing a greater level of activity yourself as somebody who does spiritual banishing, as somebody who works in the realm of exorcism and spiritual battle in that right?
Oh, absolutely. I have an exorcist and two demonologists under me, and we get together pretty often and talk about cases and whatnot. And we all agree that the cases that we're getting are darker as the years
more interesting.
In the past, there used to, and that's not to say in every case, but for the most part in the past, you would have some haunting, some level of oppression or possession, depending. But it wasn't too numerous. They weren't that often. And you could get rid of whatever was going on pretty quickly. But the cases currently are dark. The amount, the level of haunting in a person's home has, the hooks, as I call them, that these demons put into folks over a period of years sometimes, they're deeper, they're more entangled within the person itself, themselves. And so you almost need to sit down like a fine surgeon and make sure every capillary is restored, every inch of tissue is clean, because there are so many things in the modern world in relation to possession and oppression, for that matter. That the accessibility to temptation of all forms is astronomical. You can just go on the internet and find any type of temptation you want.
Oh, absolutely.
On demand, even. So,
yeah. It's even recommended to you if you looked at it before. Here's some new versions.
Absolutely.
No matter where you go. Like, you could go to buy puppy food, you know? Yeah. It's like, hey, so you like that, huh? So you like puppy food. You might like these leather masks. What? Like, literally, that's how it works. It's horrifying.
That's like, we're not in fetish play here, guys.
But it really is very much rooted the same way that oppression comes about, because it comes about from that, quote, near occasion of sin. So often, like, as somebody who suffered from a heart addiction at one point in my life, I can say that it really is that near occasion of sin. And even I can even attest to the fact of over this 7 months being locked away, being here. Not that, like, this is a bad environment to be in. I get to spend unbridled time with my wife and kid. Typically, I'm on the road 30, 35 weeks a year. So 6-7 months straight with my family is great. But at the same time, the non-activity in my day to day the way that I normally do. Things like that bring up old thought patterns. They bring up they bring up a lot of feelings of worthlessness. They bring up a lot of echoes from the past that get things stirring, and then I have to be like, hey, get three steps back, man.
Sure.
And it's tough. It's tough. It's not easy, you know. But it's there, and that's kind of what oppression is. Where it's things that you would normally give no credence to that now suddenly you are, that are out of character for you.
Absolutely. And I'm thoroughly convinced the devil puts those little stumbling blocks in a person's way to try and trip them up.
Sure.
And, you know, you made another great point in that boredom or not having something to do is one of the biggest triggers.
Idle hands.
Yeah.
I hate to use the Amish turn of phrase, folks, but idle hands are the devil's playground.
Yep.
You know,
it really is.
Like you got nothing better to do. That's how I explain it to people. You got nothing better to do but something bad. So normally at that point, that's when I get going with some of the gear back here. That's when I step over to my right side and start tinkering on the bench, something, to get those juices flowing in another way, to turn that into a positive energy as fast as I can, before I dwell on it and really drill down into that horrible, horrible thing, that we're all prone to do.
We are. You know, every one of us has our own flavor of temptation, our own particular thing that leads us away from where we want to be. And we can tend to ruminate on. So,
sure.
Just like you brought up addiction, you know, an addict will, when they look back at their drug use, they think about the good times they had. You know, they don't think about the down times, the times when, you know, they struggled or were in that alleyway or, you know, literally on their face.
Yep.
They think about all the fun and everything associated with it, and et cetera. And that's what brings them back to relapse.
Absolutely.
It's the same way we look at temptation or sin. You know, we think, man, that was sure fun. Man, I had a good time. It made me feel good. But we fail to forget to remember the consequences.
Yes.
The pain and suffering that we inflicted upon ourselves or others going through that process.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that it's not a catharsis in any way, shape, or form, not that it's not literally the point of changing yourself, you know, because it is. But like I've had to try to explain that to my wife in the fact of I can forgive, but I can't forget. I can forgive myself, but I can never forget what I did, ever, ever. Because if I forget what I did, then I'm loath to repeat it.
Absolutely.
I'm loath to lose my own vigilance at that point. I'm loath to recognize that, like, hey, wait a minute, that's a trigger moment. Stop. Reverse course. Evasive maneuvers, you know? And you really do have to be on guard for that. Like you're saying, I mean, I hate to use a prison term here, but even the recidivism rate of exorcism and the possessed and obsessed, you know, like how many times do you have to continually follow up, even if it's in a therapeutic way, you know, even if it's making a house call to go see somebody who's been delivered to keep them moving forward. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
you know, sometimes I think I have the Bishop maintenance plan going on or something for folks.
Well, and let's kind of bring this back home real quick, back to end time prophecy, because like we were saying, so much of the seeing the exorcisms, the increase in this activity, the increase in people's lapsed state of mind, even like I said earlier, when the church was like, mea culpa, we need to restart the exorcism school because we have told people evil doesn't exist somehow.
Yeah.
And that's irresponsible. So
it is. There is literal evil in the world that is seeking to destroy humanity, and we can't be lackadaisical about it. We can't, you know, sit back on laurels and say, oh, well, that's the way it's been for a while. It's okay. It won't be that bad.
Yeah.
You know, and usually that's just before, here, hold my beer and watch what I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. And even to put it back into biblical terms here, to go back to the concept of end times, things like that, right back to the end of 2 Thessalonians, for this reason, God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie, and so that there will, and so that all will be condemned who have not believed the truth, but have delighted in wickedness. Pretty much exactly what people are talking about nowadays, where there is, people are living in a powerful delusion right now in the world. And let's start kind of cracking that nut a little bit about the delusion that most people live in. And that's with a little D, folks. That's just, it's kind of the lie that we tell ourselves, I guess.
I think the biggest delusion that many people, I won't say all, but many people have,
sure,
is that they say, you know, I'm fine with God, I'm a good person. Well, the reality is, even Christ himself said there's no one good except the Father in heaven. And we can read other passages in Scripture where all of our works are like dirty rags before him. And, you know, it goes on and on and on.
Sure.
The reality is the human heart is deceitfully wicked above all else, as we read in the Old Testament. Then when people say, oh, just follow your heart, I usually stop them and say, you better double think that.
Yeah.
Because you're operating on emotions and not thought.
That's
you're,
right.
You're operating, I feel like I'm this, therefore I must be this. And that's getting into my other hat with therapy.
Well, you know, get into it, though, because that is so important. That is such a... One thing that I try to explain to people is that religion is much more rational, and spirituality is much more rational than you would think.
Sure.
Like you think that it is literally like the biggest leap of faith in the world to believe, and it's not. It's literally the simplest thing, and it is the simplest point of surrender in the world. So, and it could be anything, folks. It could be anything that you believe in, as long as it's something greater than yourself in that 12-step realm. You know what I mean? Sure. I'd love it to be God with a capital G, but I'm not going to force that on anybody. As long as you see the fact that you're a cog in the machine, I think is the real important trick here. So let's kind of start getting into, like you were saying, that delusion that we give ourselves willingly.
Well, that delusion goes hand in hand with a secondary delusion that we are the master and commander of our own lives.
Yes.
We're not the center of the universe. The world doesn't exist to service us. We're not truly the master and commander of our own life, even from a natural perspective, because there's so many, we live in different nations with different laws, with different rules, different political powers, and we live according to the laws and rules set forth by the society in which we live.
Sure.
And if we don't, we go to prison. So either way, we're not the master and commander of our own life.
That's right.
There's always someone else that puts expectations on behaviors and things like that. And so they have to get rid of that delusion that they're the sum total of everything. But the biggest examples of that are like your Hollywood stars, you know, that they're so infatuated with selfies and, you know, are you keeping up with the Kardashians? Are you getting this latest thing because this person got it or whatnot? And it's like,
sure,
my God, people, what's the point? Give it 20 years, you're not going to look the same. Your body's going to break down. Yeah. Gravity will take effect.
In love with physical.
Yeah. 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 And that love is just physical. It's all about sex, you know. It's just, who can you have this week in bed? And can I tally up my points? And the thing is, all of that leads to self-destruction. Sure. There is no other outcome. And I have yet to run into a person, if they're being truthful, when they've lived that kind of lifestyle, that are really proud of their past.
Or truly happy when in and of themselves. And
absolutely.
I think that's really what it boils down to. And what I've tried to explain, I love hearing it from somebody who is not only a therapist and a priest, but an exorcist. The fact that it comes down to you, it comes down to your choice. You have a choice whether you want to be that way. And the thing I try to explain to people is that surrender is literally the most freeing thing you'll have. And it's not that hard to get there. Once you actively start, like, put a list of things down. Feel free. Doesn't matter. You could say traffic, like things that annoy you, things that you like. Put them on a whiteboard. And then if you're in control of them, ultimately in control of them, wipe it off the whiteboard and see how many things you actively wipe off that whiteboard.
Not many.
Not many. Not many. Because, like, there is actually very, and this is something that I used to try to teach the junior high and high school kids that I taught, was that the only thing you ultimately have control over is the world in the distance that you can sprint to. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, I have control of the immediate world around me right now. That's it. That's all I have control over. I have no control over what's happening in Darfur. None.
No.
None. So should I let that occupy my thought and use up all my energy? No. I should, in theory, be putting all my energy into what is right here directly around me.
Well, you know, that goes hand in hand with people that want to become missionaries.
Sure.
You know, I can bring that angle into it. You know, they're always saying, I want to go to Africa. I want to go to Asia. I want to go there. And I sit back and think, you want to go into another country, but you won't get off your sofa to go talk to your neighbor.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, it's always something else. Grand plan. And they don't look at the blessing or the service that they can provide to someone right in front of them.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. Have you thought about changing the world directly in your neighborhood first?
Exactly.
You know, have you thought about bettering the life of those around you who you see every day?
Yeah.
because that should be your focus. And that's kind of the idea, is that our little ripple meets with their ripple and makes a bigger ripple, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is that cumulative spiritual concept. And it's not that hard once you distill it down to that pure psychological point. Because it really is that hard psychological band-aid of like, can I give that my energy? Like, yes, that makes me feel horrible inside. But I can't give that my energy because I have things right here that I can change. I have people right here in my reach that I can help. So that's what we should focus on. And I think that's kind of what you're getting to the point of, is that we need to work on ourselves so that we are not kind of that self-fulfilling prophecy.
Sure. Well, you know, I ran into a client one time. They were my client, and this person, and this was in the alcohol and drug field. They said, well, you know, I've always been the alcohol and drug person, and I'm always going to be that. And I looked at them, put my hand on their shoulder, and I simply said, by your own admission, by those very thoughts, that's you're always going to be the alcohol and drug person, because you're not giving yourself any other opportunity to be anything else.
That's right.
You've bought into your own story. You've bought into your own lie.
Yep. Yeah, literally, you are your own self-fulfilling prophecy at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard sometimes to get to that point. It's hard sometimes to realize that. And just to kind of loop this back around into end time prophecy, the point of the prophet is to give you a way out. The point of the prophet is to say, look, man, we are headed down a horrible, horrible road if we don't fix something. And that's not a happy message. That's not a good message. People generally don't want to hear it.
No.
I challenge you to find anybody on the receiving end of an intervention who was ever excited to be there. or even on the giving side of an intervention that was excited to be there. Maybe there's one dude who's like the guy's friend for like 20 years and been like, I've been telling every one of you bastards for 30 years. None of you would listen to me. High time we're here. Hot damn, I can't wait for this moment. There may be a few of those out there. I'm not saying there aren't.
I've met a few of those people, so I'm sure there are.
But yeah, like nobody is ever happy to be on the receiving end of that. Nobody is ever happy. Like, none of the people of Nineveh were like, hot dang, man, somebody buy this dude a beer. That's a heck of a story. You know? Like, not a single person in Nineveh, when Jonah got shot out of that whale's mouth, was like excited to hear the message of God when he came to the shores with it. As a matter of fact, they drove him out of town. He was sent by God to give them a message, and when he gave it to him, they drove him out of town. So, you know, like it really is that point of we're always on the crux of that. And I think the plus side comes from the story of Job in the Old Testament. And that's one of the rare times in the Old Testament where you see that, like, God and the devil are still kind of cool. You know?
At least they're having a conversation.
Well, at least they're willing to still make a bar bet, you know?
We're
literally, they're up there and they're talking about Job, and the devil pops up in heaven like, hey, yeah, folks, go read it. The devil just pops up in heaven and goes, oh, yeah, that dude, huh? All right. Well, tell you what, you can do anything to him, devil, but you can't harm him. And I think that really goes to show where we are right now as humanity. Like I think we really are amongst that test right now, amongst that litmus test as humanity, where like we are sitting on the dung heap. A ranch has been trashed. The cattle are dead. Family's gone. Nothing but rags left, and people are walking by going, "Hey, don't I know that guy? He looks real familiar, man." You know? And that's kind of where we are as humanity right now. And we're on that precipice where we could go one of two ways. Like, this literally is that end time moment, folks, where we have a crux decision as humanity. We can either continue unbridled hate toward each other for no other reason than that dude believes this, or that girl believes that, or we could wise up and realize that everybody believes something different, even in your own camp.
Absolutely.
Like, there is not a single person with the exact same thought form in the world. It doesn't exist. We are snowflakes. There are some general truths with a capital T that are taught. But aside from that, we are snowflakes, man. We are all individual, spiritually, in the way that we experience the world, in the way that we filter the world. Despite these truths with a capital T, would that be a correct statement, Father?
Oh, I absolutely think, you know, everyone has a slight variation, even for those that, like myself, follow the strict guidelines of the scriptures. I think there's always, so everyone brings their past, their family issues, their
absolutely
situation in which they were raised, hurts, pains, failures, successes. They bring it all, and it helps to shape their way of thinking. And each person's different, you know. Like for myself, I was raised with great parents. They were awesome to me, and I got all the love and support I needed. Someone else comes from a family, their parents want nothing to do with them, or worse, they abuse them for years and years and years. They're going to have a different mindset on parents, family, relationships, what relationships even look like, much less theological concepts. So
sure,
everyone has something slightly different.
Well, and that's just it. Like you're saying, we all come at it from our own filter. We are like, you and I could sit in a room and listen to the exact same talk from somebody and glean 180 degree different things because of the way that we filter information. And that's where truth with a lowercase T comes in, you know, that truth that is up to the observer, literally. Like, truth is relative to the observer in that point, because you're going to experience the exact same speech from somebody in a totally different way because of the filter through which you listen to everything.
Absolutely. And it's also the reason why they need at least two witnesses to come forward when a crime or an event happens, like a car wreck. Mm-hmm. You know, so two people watching the same car wreck, they're going to have two different versions of what happened. But if you synthesize both, you can get a good idea of what's going on.
And that's why any good lawyer will argue the fact that eyewitness testimony is questionable at best.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and that just really goes right back to the point of it comes down to faith at some point.
Yeah.
Like,
you have to have faith at some level just to live.
Well,
you know, people have faith that they're going to wake up tomorrow.
Again,
if nothing.
You know, that was one of the things that I used to teach the children that I worked with all the time in junior high and high school was, if anything, you should thank God twice a day. And that's when you wake up and when you go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, like, wow, I woke up today. What an incredible opportunity I have before me. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Wow. I made it through today. Thank you so much for that incredible opportunity. I hope I don't waste tomorrow. That's yeah. it. Like,
that's a great way to look at it.
Because it may not be your decision to wake up tomorrow. That is one of those many things, ladies and gentlemen, that is out of your control entirely. You have no yeah. control over that. None. Perfectly healthy people have just up and died in their sleep. It's happened. Not to get morbid or morose, but that's literally the case. So you never really know what tomorrow brings. Like, as a fourth degree Knight of Columbus, we've always got that memento mori tempus fugit. You know, remember death, time is fleeting. And yeah. it's just the concept of, are you doing your best today? Are you putting your best foot forward when you wake up in the morning? Are you taking that into consideration? And I think that is a lot what the end time prophecies are really talking about more than anything. Whenever you start digging into the words from Thessalonians that are interpreted in that way by many people, whenever you start digging into the words from Revelation, those people, once you start looking at the filter through which they viewed reality and the world that they lived in, the world of persecution that they live in, it definitely influences things. It influences how you write. It influences art. It influences everything. To say that it doesn't literally dismisses art across culture, across time.
Yep.
Like, and that's mural art. That's any art form. It just caps it at the knees if you say that it's not a filter through which people are seeing the world, you know? Even the art that's coming out right now, the art that's being made right now, guaranteed is influenced by what is going on in the world. So when you start looking at Thessalonians, and I'm no theologian, people. Yes, I was in the seminary for a year. Out of 9 years it would take to be a priest, I was in there for one, the first one, all right? Not like in the middle somewhere, not close to the theology master or anything like that, all right? I am as layman as they come, ladies and gentlemen. I would say that I am decently read in the scripture. I would not say I am well read. I am not typically the person, other than John 3:16, who can just straight up quote scripture for you. But I've got a decent gist. I've got a pretty good idea. Like, whenever you were talking earlier, about Paul and his words, I knew immediately that it was Thessalonians that you were talking about, things like that. So, I guess let's kind of break it down for the average person who doesn't necessarily have a religious basis here, Father. The point that I'm trying to make is that the end time prophecy is much more kind of like that alchemical allegory for man, you know, and the multiplication of metals and the finding of gold and other metals, you know, it's kind of that refiner's fire concept in the Bible through your trials, through your heat, you are made a better person.
Yeah.
Along those lines. And I think that that was really much more the intent and the message behind these apocryphal texts, behind these texts that like the Book of Daniel, things like that. Mm-hmm. Because the Book of Daniel is one that is highly looked at right now. That's another one that only parts have been released.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one that I hear all the time, is that the church is getting ready to release the last parts of the Book of Daniel. I don't know. For me, it's, like I said, for me, it's one of those, these were written so that we understand that we face dire consequences if we don't take care of ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I come from the school of thought that if we don't come back to that relationship with our Creator, everything will come down as it was foretold, like you said, the true prophets.
Absolutely.
You know, God is very gracious. God is very loving. And that's why he's delayed his return for 2,000 years.
He's also very jealous. God is a jealous God. There is no confusing that scripture, and there is no confusing that word. Even in the Hebrew, it means the exact same thing. He is jealous.
Yep. And, you know, right from the beginning of the Ten Commandments, you'll have no other gods but me. And he holds us to it. You know, we can, you know, from the Christian perspective, you put in, if you try to put anything else in your life above God, whether it be money, yeah, people, jobs, etc.
Try it. See how it works for you.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's idolatry.
Well, and like I said at the beginning of the show, I myself, even in that diatribe I put on the page when I said that I hold a higher office than the priest who was officiating my wedding. The words I said and that my wife said held more power than those of the man with the collar who was technically, quote, in persona Christi.
Mm-hmm.
At that very moment when I said those words, my presence with the Lord was technically more powerful than his, because I was making a bond between my wife, my God, and me.
Yeah.
He was present as witness, nothing more.
And so quickly, you know, a lot of women take offense to the scriptures that say the wife is subservient to the husband. However, if you keep reading,
that's right,
the husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church.
Yep. Which means to give your life, to give everything, to give everything for that. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And
that's the thing a lot of folks don't realize, because they leave out that last part. It's actually a bigger, broader burden on the husband, because how does one love another human being like Christ does and did? You know, that's massive.
It is. And, you know, it really is that understanding a mutual responsibility to each other and to something larger than yourself.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people lose sight of that.
Yeah.
I myself, I would say, if anything, Father, I am a lapsed Catholic. I am far from removed from my God. Me and my God talk every day. We have a very close relationship. I still read. I still maintain my responsibility to educate myself, to educate my conscience, to educate my spirit in growth. That is one of the few vows I made in the world at my time of confirmation, was that
oh,
was that I would continue to educate me. That was my responsibility now, to read, even to read other doctrines, so that I could be better strengthened in my own and in my own belief and in my own faith. That became a compelling responsibility to me, to educate myself, yes, in the words of the Quran, and to be able to see that in the full light of universal truth, to be able to see the Abrahamic root in that, and the tie of common teaching of truth. These are things that are utmost importance, even as you said earlier, to be co-creator in the universe, so to speak, in the same right that God spoke the universe into being, things that we speak and say are.
Absolutely. We create our reality by our thoughts and behaviors, you know. A lot of people say, I want to be a better person. I just tell them, well, then be a better person.
Then think about being a better person. Like, actively think about that. Remember that. Put it at the forefront of your mind. And that's the hard thing, is to leave the distraction behind. I say it all the time that myself, I find a hard time finding quiet, and not a hard time finding quiet time or a time that things aren't happening, but a hard time finding quiet, finding that still moment within myself. Whereas at one point it was a muscle that was flexed and used regularly, it's not anymore. Mm-hmm. So the muscle's a little flabby. Needs some work, you know. As Hans and Franz would say, they would like to pump me up.
Well, the good news is we're all a work in progress.
Well, and I think that's it. That's just it. And I think that is a lot of what is missed in the concept of the New Jerusalem in Revelations chapter 21, the next to last chapter. I really find the book of Revelations. I'll send you a copy. I'll have to find a copy and send it to you of my album, Revelations. I used to have quite a bit of fun going through the Gospels, going through the Bible, and writing musical interpretations.
Of the
Bible. So I actively went out, and it was not an easy task to find the New American Bible on tape.
Oh, I bet.
It was not easy. Because, well, I mean, of course, I wanted to use as close to the original Greek text as possible. So that's where you go. So I found that, and, you know, listened to it ad nauseum for about a month going back and forth to work. That's all I listened to, was the book of Revelation on tape. And I made notes, and I really condensed this thing down, and I put it into chapters that went together and that kind of stuff, and basically made an album that timed out to the same amount of time as listening to the book of Revelations on tape.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of like a soundtrack to the book of Revelations. The same time it takes you to read the book is the same time it takes to listen to the album. So very interesting stuff, very out there. But this is, like I said, something that I have been into researching and into reading for years. To me, as a poet, as somebody who writes words, uses words, things like that, it is one of the most well-written texts out there. As far as imagery, poetic use, things like that. And like you said, to go through and see it in the light of the time, to use the filter of the time, to use the filter of a man suffering in exile, on Patmos.
Yep.
And yes, people, no disguising it. What may very well have turned to some sort of madness at some point in exile. Does that discount anything that's there? No. It is still very valid warning in that building of the personal temple and in that becoming a whole person. I think even more so if you look at it in that right.
Yeah, you know, we're John was human just like anyone else.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did the best he could with the tools he had.
Well, and that's just it. Like, none of these people were necessarily scholars to begin with. Neither the people telling the stories nor the people near them who collected them and later wrote them down and put them down. So many people imagine that, like, now granted, Paul was a little bit of a different story because most of his works were actual letters written to churches.
Yeah.
But most of the other stuff, Mark, Luke, John, things like that, these were written years after.
Yeah.
And not necessarily by the witness of the event, but more the apostle of the witness, bearing witness to the story told.
Yeah. And the reason why there's some variableness in the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, is that they were going off of memory. So there's going to be some variableness simply due to the memory piece. But the main storyline didn't change at all.
Yes.
Through any of the synoptic gospels.
Yeah.
And of course, John wrote his own without the use of Mark. But I always tell folks, if you want to know about the heart of Christ, read the book of John.
Yes.
Because he was the beloved.
He was.
Jesus loved him like a son, and he was truly beloved. And he writes from, again, that lens of that close relationship with Christ.
Well, John is very much, as it's termed, the, quote, I am gospel. That is the gospel where Christ gives the direct teaching of who he is. Whereas the synoptic gospels, as you're talking about, Matthew, Mark, Luke, the three big boys, the real heavy hitters, so to speak, are the ones that are the bear witness gospels. They are the ones that tell us the stories of the passion. Mm-hmm. They are the ones that tell us the stories of the nativity, like the horrible backstory. Like, dude, you want to go hear the backstory of how Herod was like, oh yeah, 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 there's another king. He's a little baby. Go kill them all. All of them. Go find all the babies and kill all of them. That was Herod. That's what the man said. it's called the slaughter of the innocents, and it happened. and covered in my album called Emmanuel. because, yes, even back then, I covered the uncomfortable topics. And the thing is, like, these are not always happy stories, even whenever you go through and you read the Gospels and stuff like that. Like, there were some horrifying stories in there, man. When you go through and start reading about the exorcism of the pigs, when you go through and start really reading the story of Lazarus, and the real lessons there, you know, like esoteric, hermetic, all kinds of things, like, wow. The truths told by Christ and that direct connection that we had with divine, whether you believe it triune God, whether you believe it, connection with the divine capital D universal truth, were amazing. Amazing. some of the most amazing teachings ever. And when you really start breaking them down, like I've held for years, and we should really do a whole episode on it sometime, Father, the parallels between the teachings of Christ and Kabbalism. And I firmly believe, like I said earlier, that's one of the reasons why the high priests were listening to him at the time of the counting, whenever he went to be counted and got lost on the caravan back home when he was young. Like, it would probably only be a Kabbalistic student and a very advanced one that would have the ears of the high priests.
Oh, you know it. And don't forget, he was the God-man and is the God-man.
Yeah.
You know, both fully human and fully God. And just think of the depths of knowledge and wisdom he probably shared even at 12 years old to these folk.
Well, yeah, precisely. And like I said, to be that advanced, to have the ears of the Sanhedrin bent, to have the ears of the high priests, you would have had to have been in the rank and file. You would have had to have been somebody of some kind of knowledge in that realm, because that was really this. And I still hold to this day that is why he was crucified. Was Christ was trying to give that truth of direct connection with God to the people. He was trying to remove the high temple from the equation. The whole speech at the marketplace when destroying the tables of the money changers speaks to that entirely.
Absolutely.
That he's talking about, we should have no more burnt sacrifice. We shouldn't be doing these things. We can talk to God anytime we want to. What's your problem? So, and
because our bodies became the temple of the Holy Spirit at that point, after Christ sent the Holy Spirit,
and
then I'm reminded of him talking to the Samaritan woman. She said, "Well, your people say I need to worship on that mountain, and my people say I need to worship on this mountain." And Christ told her, "There's a day coming, and it now is, that you won't worship God on either mountain."
That's right. It won't matter where you worship him. You just better be worshiping something. You better be caring about. And that's what I tell people. When you look at God, remember there's a capital G there. And that means hey, man, that could be the Judeo-Christian God. I don't know, man. That could be Vishnu when I get up there, for all universal knowledge. I have no idea. But you better be believing in something greater than yourself.
Yeah,
because if you think you have ultimate control over what's going on, I would challenge you against any random law of physics to prove that.
Yeah.
To prove that you actively have control over any outcome, period. Period. Other than what is directly around you.
Yeah.
And if I had $10,000 like our guest Mike Turber, I would put a $10,000 challenge on it. I don't. But if you can prove to me that you ultimately have control over something outside of where you can run to directly, let me know. Like, send me a video. I'd love to see something about it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because we as people, I think, have gotten to the point where we think we have some kind of control over this, Father. And, you know, as any of the prophets would tell us, it's the fact of, well, we have a choice.
Yeah.
You have a choice, people.
Take up or ship out, basically.
Well, and it's put up or ship out, one of the two, you know. And we are literally to that point as a society right now, where it's, you know, put up or ship out, one of the two, because we need to fix something. We as a people need to wake up. And this is no end time prophecy, folks. Y'all know me. My audience knows me. I am one of the most rational people out there in the world. I used to work for a fearmonger, man, and I love the guy. He's a cool dude. Like, I like having a beer with Alex. He's an all right guy, you know? but here's the thing. There's a lot of fear sold there. A lot.
Sure.
And I can't even say that in a soft way. There's a lot. And I just can't do that, man. I can't live in fear, because when I live in fear, I'm putting negativity out there. And if at the very least I am in control of what I put out.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know a priest or a collar wearer out there that denies that universal truth, Father, that I am in control of the energy that I release from me.
Absolutely. Then really, that's the only thing a person can control in their life is themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, people make choices and then they wonder how they got there. Well, just kind of look back on your own path there and see exactly what happened, because, you know, there's plenty of people that went through hardships in their early life and came out smelling like a rose on the other side. I often think of, oh my goodness, her name just escaped me, Born Blind and Deaf. Oh my goodness. I had the name and then it just went, whoop.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. Well, early 1900s, she was born blind and deaf. And
Helen Keller.
Yes, Helen Keller.
There you go.
Thank you.
No worries. Carry on.
We'll have a food baby going on. but she was born blind and deaf, and she learned how to write. She learned how to express herself. She learned how to do a lot of things. And she is like the prime example. She could have chose to sit back and say, woe is me, I'm blind and deaf, and I'll never be able to do things in life, et cetera, because of my circumstances, and then blame everyone else for her problems. But she didn't. You know, she rose above it. She worked hard on herself, and folks can read about Helen Keller. You know, she was amazing. So we all control our life, but we have to take grasp of our own choices and behaviors as we go through this life and stop blaming everyone else for our own shortcomings.
Well, and I think that that's really the most honest and true statement right there, is that ultimately it's like karate, Father. Like, we control our response to the world around us. Nothing more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ultimately, that is what we have control over, is how we respond. And I had this conversation. I love my mom. I love you, Mom. I love you. I love you a lot. But I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say it publicly. And we had the conversation out on her patio the other night where I was like, just scroll past it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but they kept going on and they kept doing this and they kept doing that. And I'm like, okay, so you were trying to prove you were right. Well, no. I was trying to do this. And I'm like, you weren't having a conversation. You were trying to prove you were right. No. I was trying to prove that. Oh, and I was like, oh, you just realized it, that you were right. You weren't trying to have a conversation. You weren't trying to just openly hear what somebody believed, accept it, and move on. That's a conversation. Or even having a conversation about what they believe it and why they believe it.
Yeah.
And accepting it and moving on. No. you were trying to convince somebody that you were right. And that's not a conversation. That's not even a debate.
No, it's not.
And, like, that's a hard reality to put forth to a lot of people, Father. But that is the reality in the world that we live in, is that people are not ready to have the conversation. They are not ready to have a debate. They are trying to convince somebody that they are right.
Yeah.
Like, you can be right. I don't care. Please, good God, prove me wrong. I would much rather know that my 45 years of horribly attained knowledge is utterly wrong than to sometimes know I'm right. or that the lessons that I've learned had to be learned that way. You know?
Yeah.
And like we were saying earlier, we really do become our own self-fulfilling prophecy. When it comes down to end time prophecy, like it really is much like anything today. You have to view it through the lens through which people lived it. You have to view it through which the lens that people were affected by it in that time.
Oh, absolutely.
Because to do it through now from 1,000 years ago does it zero justice. None. It gives it no understanding.
Mm-mm.
And
not.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I love reading these things. I love researching these things. Even now, probably my great reward right now is the fact that I have been reading like voraciously, Father. And granted, different texts, different things. Most of them in the alchemical realm. And it's very interesting to me to see the extreme parallels between Christianity, between some of the teachings of Aquinas, and even my boy, the sinful flesh sack himself, Saint Augustine, with whom I share a feast day. My birthday is the feast day of St. Augustine. So, like, I love Augustine, but even some of his work on self-improvement, things like that, whenever you start going through and reading it, is so akin to this work, akin to this concept of the refiner's fire and trying to use the concept of going through horrible trials in life to become a better person. And that the reason you go through trial is to be filtered, is to become a better person.
Absolutely. We have to go through that stuff a lot of times in your life because, you know, people can warn us about things or, tell us not to do something, but if we haven't walked the hard path, we're less likely to listen.
Sure.
And we're less likely to take it to heart because, you know, I know when I was growing up, adults would tell me, you know, don't do this or that. And I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah. All right.
You know, why shouldn't I do this? It sounds awesome. And then you walk that path and you're like, yeah, that sucked.
take it from a man who became blind in his 40s, children. I'm just playing. you can take that down whatever rabbit hole you like, folks. but even you, all of a few episodes informed me of the fact, and believe me, I am informed of a lot of things, ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to the world of reefinalia and reefer and paraphernalia and terminology and words and definitions and gray areas and things like that. But to have learned that that is sorcery.
Yeah.
Was fascinating. Absolutely. It was, and like, it wasn't that I didn't take you at your word, but I started doing more research and it was like, oh, wow, interesting. I'll be honest with you, Doc, as a therapist and as a father here, I'm not going to say that curtailed my marijuana usage a whole lot. but I will tell you this, it made me a lot more self-present in the way I present myself and the way I act when I am.
Yeah.
It made me a lot more present of mind in that way, much like in the realm that the day I got business cards that said Chris Jordan, audio engineer, I stopped getting drunk at bars.
Yeah.
Because now I have a public presence, and next time I come in here, I may be coming in with a business face on with a band that I work with. And the last thing I want them to think is, oh, there's that drunk dude. Great. He's in charge tonight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not that dudes and beer doesn't mean something. I mean, hey, I'm sitting here having a nice glass of gin while we talk. But note, I am far from drunk. I am far from impaired. And yeah. I am making a decent amount of sense. I wouldn't say a whole lot of sense because I'm no theologian. But I play one on TV. But I mean, literally, it is just the fact of you have to learn to realize yourself and be willing to realize and recognize yourself, folks. You know, like I said, the words of the father, whenever he was like, no, you are dabbling in sorcery.
Yeah.
It took me aback. I'll be honest with you, as somebody who's for the greater portion of his life partaken and been very spiritual in my life and been even religious at numerous points in my life. It was one of those like, wow, okay. And then I really started examining it from your point of view, much like I did earlier with all of the other point of views with the Pope right now, where it's like, wow, okay, yeah, absolutely. I can completely see where he is saying that. Okay.
Yeah.
And it makes me consider things and my usage in a different way.
Sure.
So if that is something that helps me along my path and that moves me further, I consider that a move in the positive against the apocryphal text, against the concept of it being an apocryphal time. And I think that's what's really necessary is our own, to use the big word, I guess, our own willingness to accept our concupiscence.
Sure.
Concupiscence, folks. It's a big word. It's a hard word. It's a favorite one of St. Augustine, but it's the fact that you willingly live in a world of sin.
Yeah.
Like, by default, kind of, but still by will, still by choice. And, you know, like, hey, if that's my equivalent of having a couple beers at the end of the night, all right. I ain't going out. I ain't hitting the road. I ain't moving. And typically, while I do it, that's when I'm delving into some deep text. That is when I'm actively moving myself forward as a person. So is it something that opens me to a near occasion of sin? Possibly. No doubt.
Sure.
No doubt. No different than two or three drinks might inhibit me a little bit. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And you literally have to be willing to recognize that, people. You have to be okay with recognizing that.
Yeah.
I am willing to say that can let defenses down. That can make me possibly not recognize the enemy, capital E, in the terms of this black book over here, the Roman ritual, the enemy, can let that enemy slip by if you're not careful. Can let that enemy under your roof if you're not careful.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's what we as a people right now need to be careful of. We as a people need to exercise, please God, everybody, before Election Day. Like, we are but a week before Election Day is the airing of this show. And, like, we've got to exercise the hate. And I mean EXOR. Like, like what the Father does, exercise. Like, yeah. We got to get rid of things. We got to be willing to get rid of things to change ourselves as a people, to change the way that we view each other. There is such, and I mean amongst people I know, Father, right now, just an utter feeling of angst and hate, like capital H, hate. And I'm going to pop it up on screen real quick, because I mean, I saw it pop up in a podcast group the other day, Padre. And I was like, are you joking me right now?
Oh, wow.
And, I'm going to pop up the definition of sociopathic, ladies and gentlemen. Because I think it's something that's really necessary for folks to understand right now in the world. And if this is just the general search right here, if you look it up, a person with a personality disorder manifesting itself in extreme antisocial attitudes and behavior and a lack of conscience.
Yeah.
If you can't tell me that's what's happening across the board in our country right now, red and blue both, you just ain't paying attention.
Yeah.
That is the true definition of sociopathy, folks, right there. And we got a therapist on the line. Exorcist first, therapist second. You know why? Because after exorcism, people need therapy.
Yes, they do.
And the only way he can go see them is if he's a legal therapist. So, but there it is on screen, like the definition of sociopath. And if any of you people out there, either way, acting extremely toward one another, try to tell me that you are not sociopathic, you are part of the problem. I don't care if you're part of this group or not. I love every one of you in the terms of Christ as a brother. Equally, you all have equal footing in my mind. But here's the thing. The second you dwell into the world of sociopathy, the second you dwell into the world of literally hating somebody that you have never met, that's disturbing. And that is a disturbing trait. And that is a trait of sociopaths. And that's not a happy trait, folks. And that's where we're at. We are at the point of people who put utter vitriol toward other people that they do not know, whether they be a Trumper, whether they be an anti-Trumper, it doesn't matter. It's coming from all directions equally.
Yep.
And we need to pay attention to that as a people. Because that in and of itself is the end time. That in and of itself is the self-fulfilling prophecy. That is the fire that will keep on burning, as was put forth earlier in the book of Revelation. That is the fire that will come down the size of a mountain and cause all grass, a third of the grasses on earth, to burn. That's what will do it, is our anger toward each other. Forget anything coming from outside. We really have to be on guard against, quote, that capital E enemy again. When it comes to this, when it comes to this election cycle, when it comes to this decision, we've got to keep that in check. And I think as a people, we have lost that concept. We have decided to be divided amongst each other instead of united despite each other. And I think we can be united despite each other. I think that we can pick up that slack. I think that we can figure that out. And I think that that is a lot of what, like I was saying earlier, the scriptures are talking about, is really getting back to the point of understanding yourself, realizing yourself, realizing the potential in yourself and the potential that you have to affect those in the world around you.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that's the uplifting part about the end time prophecies. That's the uplifting part, is that we have a choice. We have a choice to buy into this evil, and to buy into this sucking evil that sucks us all down a black hole of hate, or to take the slightly harder road of understanding and love and rise above it, come to a greater point of understanding, and come to that greater point of truth later. So, Father, thank you so much for taking the time, as always.
You're very welcome.
And chatting with us, going over these things. I know there may have been some points this evening that, you know, wouldn't necessarily jibe with a lot of Catholic understanding, with a lot of even Christian understanding at some points.
True. But you know what? Like you said, it's a conversation.
It is. And it's a conversation that has to be had, and it's an understanding that has to be had. And, you know, my word of warning to people is the same as the prophets. Like, get it together, people. Get your life together. Get your life in order before you start pointing fingers at other people. Before anything else, make sure that your world is in order. And I think that, above all else, was the real warning of the prophets, the real warning of the end time prophecies, is that we need to get our house in order. We need to make sure that we are ready, despite anything else, that we're ready on the daily for that circumstance to happen.
Absolutely.
Well, tell everybody where they can, because how's the show been going, by the way?
The Exorcist Journey has been going great. I missed a couple shows due to illness or a family member passing away, but
yeah,
beyond that, had quite a good showing.
Good.
It's a live stream on Facebook, and it's just called The Exorcist Journey. And I talk about all things otherworldly and not just about exorcisms, though sometimes that comes up. I've also talked about end time events. I've talked about just about anything.
Yeah.
And then I have a podcast called The Wilderness Call, and that talks specifically about end time events, current trends and whatnot, and it's unabashedly Christian.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot to tell you.
Ooh.
But that's been really good, too.
How has that been going? Like, you've had a good response so far?
Yeah, it's been going really good. You know, I record them, and we just, folks love it. And if they got questions, I can answer their questions on the Facebook page for it. And yeah, it's just been going great.
Fantastic. I'm always glad to hear whenever people get to get good messages out with good content with good people. I think that marriage is just so utterly important when it comes to messages like this, like what we're talking about tonight. I'm not going to lie. I enjoy some 700 Club. I like Maury Povich, too. You know what I mean?
Well, you got to see who the father is. Come on.
Hey. The day he hooked onto that brother, he figured out like four days of content out of five. And that's just it. That's what we have to remember, folks, is that while there is sensationalism like that going on, there is some fact out there. There are some things out there. There are some things that you need to be worried about. There are some things that you, as a person, whether you consider yourself Catholic, Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, I don't care. We can all agree that we are in a special place in the world and the universe right now. We are in a special place to put all hips behind the work and make something happen. And to not realize that that's happening is to ignore that end time prophecy. These are the prophecies of end times that we're living right now. These moments where we can come together as the world and move things beyond ourselves in this way, in the way that this conversation happened tonight, in the way that has never been possible in the history of humanity. So, as always, James, Father, thank you so much for coming on, for your realm of knowledge in this area, in the area of exorcism, and in your unabashed sharing of knowledge and wisdom.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Please do hold the line while we close things out. Well, real quick before we close things out, let everybody know where they can go to catch The Exorcist Journey and where they can go to catch your other show as well.
Okay. Well, The Exorcist Journey is on Facebook. And the Facebook page links up with the weekly live streams. The live streams are on Sundays at 6 p.m. And the Wilderness Call is also on Facebook, but it's also on any of the Audible apps that folks use, like Google, Anchor, Spotify, etc. It's on all the platforms.
Fantastic.
And yeah, if you're interested, come check it out. And that I release a new podcast weekly on Sundays as well.
Fantastic. I am always glad to hear good people out there doing good things and always willing to help promote that, get that out there. Please do make sure that you know that you're welcome to share that in the group anytime, Father. We firmly enjoy sharing things like that from our listeners and from our guests as well. So we firmly support all endeavors in such ways. Please do hold the line while we close things out for the evening. While you're online checking out everything for The Exorcist Journey as well as for The Wilderness, make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That is where you can check out the website. That is where you can catch all the episodes. That is also where you can find the link to podcastcadet.com. officially bringing you Dudes and Beer now. If you're a fan of podcasting like I am, want to start up a podcast for yourself, your friends, family, church, fun, school, business, whatever, stop on by podcastcadet.com today. They are your source for everything podcast. Anybody can podcast if given the right resources. That is the theory of Podcast Cadet. Everything from A to Z, soup to nuts, training to monetization. That is what we do over there. Stop on by podcastcadet.com. Use the code DUDES20 to save 20% on your way out the door. Make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com for all the episodes, for the knowledge vault, all kinds of great stuff. Remember, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.